All right. What is up, everyone? What's up, Dean?
Mate, everything's up.
Everything's up.
Except the stock market.
Exactly. it's brutal out there, huh?
We're in correction territory on the NASDAQ, so, which kind of had to happen. You know, it's been epic for so long. And so for all the reasons that everybody is reading, you know, inflation this and supply chain and Omicron and like, it, you know, the little correction is not that bad.
Yeah. And normally it's what sort of like high growth tech leads it. And then it just starts making its way down into the rest of the market. Yeah. Right. So even like Apple's down a fair amount this week. And
yeah, I mean, we don't give investing advice here. And so we roll out this.
My only investing advice is trade on current events, basically, is my investing advice. Just like from last. I'm kidding.
I was just about the same. My advice is the opposite. Yeah. Like, buy stuff and hold it for 30 years.
Zero investing advice. Zero.
Yeah, absolutely. Although you'll be pleased to know, I bought my first, other than the Doge kind of thing, you know, like a year or two ago, which I kind of rode and did pretty well on, but got out of. I bought my first Ethereum.
Nice. Yeah. It's a good time because it's been really on a downtrend for the last month or so.
It's been on the dip, and I'm like, I got inspired by all your NFT madness. Yep. And so I'm like, well, I better get some Ethereum going. So
yes.
Lit up the old, you know, Robinhood account.
Yeah.
And, like bought 10 grand's worth. I think I have three
grand. Now you officially have to change all of your screen names and handles online to deansweetman.eth. And that's
is that what that is? I wondered if that's what that was. I keep seeing it.
I can't get myself to do it. I can't.
I might do that though. Like I'm legit now. I have three coins.
Mm-hmm. And you can buy now deansweetman.eth. So you can have your own.
No way.
I'll send you a link on how to do it.
Man.
It's like, I think it's probably like $200. What, $200 worth of?
Where do I get that?
It's I'll send you the link. It's pretty easy
to
do. Yeah,
I better do it before this goes live because someone else is
exactly
going to claim.
They're going to try and sell it back to you for triple the.
Oh my gosh! I've spun up and this is kind of breaking news here. I've spun up deansweetman.com.
Oh, nice.
It's not public yet, but I'm just taking a lot of the stuff I'm writing around generosity and markets and free markets and socialism and.
And you're doing that right now on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, right?
I'm jamming it up, you know, here and there. But I'm just getting a little more serious about writing good content again. And, you know, and I think as I get older, I'm just getting a little more outspoken. You know,
there you go.
I care less what people think.
Yeah.
So there you go. Otherwise known as old white fart syndrome.
Exactly. Are you getting any pushback from like?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I love getting pushback. But it's like... I mean, my audience is pretty like friendly, so it's probably 85% positive.
There you go.
You get the occasional, if I really slap, you know, socialism around, it provokes a few people.
Right. There you go.
That's fine.
Yeah. Once it's up, we'll start linking to it. That's awesome. I think people would love that. Speaking of writing, I want to read to you a tweet that I read yesterday. I thought you'd like it. So this is a guy, his Twitter handle is Sweaty Startup. Right. And his whole sort of thing is stop trying to do the glamorous thing. He, you know, buys and invests in storage units. And, you know, he's just sort of like, I think he lives in like Idaho or Ohio and basically is like, for all the flashy businesses, you can make a really good living doing very basic stuff. And he's developed quite a bit of a following. So he tweeted the other day, stop reading about entrepreneurship, listening to entrepreneurs talk, researching business ideas and studying companies. Stop all of it because none of it matters if you aren't doing anything. Go out and make $1,000. Do something simple to make money. And then he goes on to just say, and to all of you engineers, perfectionists and overthinkers, I have a special message for you. Business doesn't have to be perfect. It never is. It isn't black and white. It isn't like code. Just ship it, dive in, embrace the uncertainty. So that echoes a lot of what you have been saying on this podcast week to week. And I actually love the challenge of like, go make $1,000.
That's right. That is really good. Or go get 100 like people using your product. Look, there's a couple of things that I think we always want to endorse. One of them is just get moving. And we're going to talk about Frank Slootman's new book in a little bit. And you just got to get going, right? And if you want to be an entrepreneur, it's really hard. it's hard to start a business. It's hard to grow a business. It's and the problem is that we look at the really successful, you know, reports in the media about this startup or that startup. For every one of those, there's, you know, thousands of them that don't make it. And for every IPO, there's thousands of companies that just stay boutique businesses.
Right.
And they're family owned and they're owned by a couple of people. And you maybe you don't get funding and maybe you just build a business, right? That is going to provide for you and your family. There is nothing wrong with that. That is
awesome. Question on that, really quickly. When did that change? Would it have been probably, I guess, MySpace, Facebook that changed kind of the sentiment around, you know, people under the age of 30 wanting to build the next unicorn, as opposed to just going like, man, I can actually build a small business and make a lot of money doing it?
I look with the scale of the internet, you know, so web 1.0, 2.0, now we're at web 3. As the internet has scaled, the ease of which to be able to, I read a nutty thing this morning. I think 80 something billion is the profit Apple makes from the App Store.
Wow.
Which means they're creating billions and billions and billions of dollars and many millionaires of people who build apps, right? So in iPhone 07, App Store 08, really kind of, you know, got cooking in 2010. In the last 12 years, the app marketplace has probably created more millionaires than any other platform in history. So it's just the scale of tech and you know, what you're able to do. But, you know, I always want to be careful in this podcast to not just focus on tech, even though we love tech and we're tech heavy. Like, there's a lot of great businesses out there that, you know, provide terrific revenue and income and employ people and give them benefits and provide great jobs. And, you know, if you're a tradesman, like if you're a builder, if you're a plumber, if you're a you know, strive to build a great one-man business and then strive to get to 20 people, you know, in your business. It's all the same. And I think the whole passion for us, you know, kings and priests is about, let's get a bunch of kings in the kingdom who are out there in the world, you know, working hard, generating wealth and making sure they're generous with that wealth to build the kingdom. So, you know, we want to encourage all kinds of business.
Let's just talk briefly, and I want to jump into these kind of other two topics, especially that book, and then I'm going to get some business advice from you. So, but before we do that, there's the this new Y Combinator deal. So it has been all over the internet, and there's a lot of detail to it that probably doesn't really matter. But for someone like me who sees it and sees all the traffic around Twitter and all the conversation, I found myself going, okay, is this that big of a deal? What does it mean? Does it really even matter? So basically the idea is Y Combinator has, you know, announced a plan to invest more capital into startups that take part in its accelerator program. And I guess it's been
just maybe explain.
Yeah.
And you can go and find out what Y Combinator is. It's a group of really smart people who have built companies and understand, and then we're in the tech world here. And if you've got a product that you've built and you're just getting started, you can enter their program. It's hard to get in, and they will literally give you money and invest in your startup, and will connect you to VCs and will let you talk to other founders. It's like Crash Course University for tech founders to accelerate. Right. What they want to do is they want to take your app, they want to take your software, your SaaS, your idea, and basically accelerate it by a couple of things: giving you cash, and that's gone from 125 grand to 375, which is a pretty big bump, which tells me there's still tons of money around for like the moral of this is there's lots of money around.
Right.
And so when you see the public markets gyrate and go up and down, just kind of, you got to understand that there's trillions of dollars sitting out there in the private markets that are looking to invest from the seed stage all the way through to late stage, you know, prior to IPO. So there's trillions of dollars around for growing businesses. So, you know, that's what this tells me. And, you know, I think there's still a ton of capital to invest in all stages.
Yep. And so that's basically someone like myself who's early stages starting a company, nowhere near going to a Y Combinator or anything like that at this point. Basically the signal from this is the details don't really matter. There's money out there. People are still believing in startups, regardless of what the rest of the market is saying. So essentially be encouraged and keep building, huh?
Big time. And there's probably been more angel funds. So an angel fund, typically might deploy 10 million, 20 million. They're writing checks of 50 to 250, mm-hmm. right? Early stage, maybe pre-product. If you've got a track record, maybe you've got a product in the wild and you're trying to find your product market fit and all the stuff that we've talked about. So, tons and tons of money out there.
Cool. Talk to me about this book. And I have to say, I started watching an interview last night. I got about 20 minutes in and honestly fell asleep, but not because the interview was boring, because it was, almost right. midnight. But all right. So talk to me about this book. I want to hear about it. You, I think, watched an interview, read, and actually really sent this around to a lot of your team. So
I did. And let's give a shout out to this podcast that we both listen to pretty religiously. Yep. I've learned more on This Week in Startups, mm-hmm. which is a guy, Jason Calacanis. Yep. And he's connected to another podcast that we love called the All In mm-hmm. Podcast. A little controversial.
I was going
to
say,
we may not comment on. So Calacanis is probably the number one angel investor of all time. Mm-hmm. He's made 300 angel investments, things like Robin Hood and Uber. You're talking like early stage, mm-hmm. like.
Calm app. What I love about him is he's very he started out as a journalist, right? Yep. He doesn't have a traditional business background. He has kind of almost like backdoored his way into
his way into
tech. And is basically just using this platform to learn and also to just share so much wisdom.
And it's deal flow. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Like it's the genius of his podcast is everybody listens to it and then he's got incubators and angel funds and syndicates and all this kind of stuff. He's just kind of parlayed everything into basically this giant funnel to find deals to invest in. I'm part of one of his funds, I get deals coming across my desk and
that's awesome.
I made some investments in some of his stuff. So, but anyway, this interview, if you don't subscribe, This Week in Startups and go to the, maybe we can put it in the notes.
We'll link to it in the notes for sure.
Yeah, just link to this. So Frank Slootman did a bunch of things, really smart guy, took some other companies, into the multi-billion-dollar valuation, started a company called Snowflake, which is, go to their website. It's like super high-end AI around big data. Mm-hmm. This is all.
And that was one of the biggest IPOs last year, right? Or was that 2020? Yeah. 2020 or 2021, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was, and I think it was a direct listing, and I think it was the biggest.
Oh, was IPO. It? Okay, yeah.
So... anyway, this guy's a gun. He's old school, right? So when you listen to this, I love how his company is called Snowflake.
He's the opposite of that.
He's like slaps. Yeah. He's slapping snowflakes. Yeah. I don't know if that's just a coincidence.
Yeah. I just love his desk in the interview. It's just the solid oak, like just old school.
Old school, man. Right? He could be in the 50s. Yeah. He's an immigrant from Holland. He came to the US in the 80s. He just loved the awesomeness of America and big thinking and vision and free market and get off your butt and go and do stuff. He's been very successful over many years. And so he is absolutely the opposite of what has been trending in the last 10 years, especially around, we've talked about this, everybody gets a trophy culture. Millennials don't want to, they've had it cushy and this. Don't want to offend anyone. And he just smacks that right in the face. And he talks about, as a leader of ownership, he's always like trying to 10X, product market fit and products, glacier versus aggressive change. Mm-hmm. So his thesis is that things move too slow. Mm-hmm. And if you I haven't read the book yet. I got the audio book and I've just started it. But essentially, he's like, get moving. Mm-hmm. Amp everything up, which is the name of the book, amp it up, and just get off your blessed assurance and get going. So he's, prioritize high focus, deliver clarity of mission. Mm-hmm. He's brutal on employee fit. Mm-hmm. Like if it's not working, and this is true, people don't like to confront. It's, I always err on the side of caution when, if someone's not fitting in the organization, you've got to let them go. I take too long to let them go. That's a bit my nature. I think it's everyone's. Yep. No one likes firing people, or you should, because it's not very nice. Yeah. Stretch goals. Like, honestly, it's kind of so 80s and 90s. it's refreshing for me, because that's kind of how I grew up.
But one of the articles I read about this, and I don't remember if it was on the This Week in Startups or something else, they just talk about how he like walks into board meetings, right? So he'll like walk into a board meeting and just say, all right, we don't have a lot of time. I'm not going to share with you any of the good things that are happening because you already know. Yep. Here are my top 10 biggest problems. Let's talk about them and let's get this thing over with as quickly as possible. And kind of sort of like, by the way, don't bother me until the next board meeting. And he's just, he's a savage in the best kind of way.
In the best kind of way. Just direct. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if he's sitting through this goals presentation and it's slide after slide, he's like, this is a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Tell me the one thing that you want to get done in this quarter or this half or this year. And let's throw everything at that. Mm-hmm. What's the most important thing? And, man, that kicked my butt. Yeah. You know, we're on our side doing all our kind of presentation and goals today, actually, on our company All In. And, it's like, you know, I do have two main things that I've kind of wanted to focus the whole company on. But every department has this and this and this and this. And, man, you just got to keep the main thing the main thing. Mm-hmm. And then when you've done it, cross it off, go to the next main thing.
That's great.
That's how you
This thing here, you said, it says, leading for unprecedented growth means declaring war on mediocrity. So I'm going to ask you a question about that. And I know Ben Horowitz in his book talks about the different, I think it's The Hard Thing About Hard Things, which is just another really good book on culture. He talks about the difference between a peacetime CEO and a wartime CEO. Which I guess basically that hyper growth company, you're pretty much a quote unquote wartime CEO. Talk to me about how you have maybe gone in and out of hyper growth, you know, breaking the status quo, pushing everybody. I guess like when do you press that button and then when do you release? And then how do you just set everybody's expectations? This is the kind of company we are.
Right.
You know? And kind of either participate or this may not be the place for you, you know?
So it's interesting to me. When you're growing fast, it's almost feels like peacetime because it's all coming to you, right? You're early to market. There's not a lot of competitors. You found product market fit and the thing explodes. You're not going out taking ground. It's just falling into your lap. In my head, the wartime stance is when growth slows, you've got competitors and you want to grow 20% year on year plus, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the war fitting on how I think of it. When you're in hyper growth, you're just taking orders. You're just mopping it up, you know, whether it's a direct to consumer product or a B2B, whatever it is. So, you know, early stage is hopefully you get the hyper growth and then you're just trying to catch up. And, you know, that getting something out the door, you know, kind of stuff that we were talking about there before, it's like having a product that works, but being willing to iterate. Now, you know, this guy actually said an interesting thing, and he does really big things, but they start building as if there was nothing. Everything's from scratch. What would you build? Like if you were tasked to build a Rolls Royce from scratch, you wouldn't cut any corners. You'd go in with the best materials, the best systems, the best platform, and you come out with this thing. If you're well-funded and you've done this a few times, that's the way to go. If you're scrappy bootstrapping, starting from nothing,
you find the playbook.
You've got to get something out the door, right? And basically, you know, have this product that maybe half sucks that you try and iterate on very quickly to get customers in. And you know, there's a way to do that. You get your customers engaged and you admit the truth. Hey, this is beta. Hey, this is, you know, 1.0. We'd love your feedback on how to make the product better. Consumers love that. They're willing to kind of deal with buggy stuff that doesn't work if you engage with them and let them know that you're going here and this is where we want to end up and we're not here today. But essentially, you basically, the mediocrity thing, once you get out the door and you're getting going, you really want to just build quality stuff. Here's the hard thing. Quality costs, right? You can't half do quality. It's expensive. So you either got to be making a profit and pouring it back into the product, or you got to go get funding. And so that's the challenge for, you know, for founders and startups and knowing the stage of where you are on the way and deciding, man, and then you've got like the marketplace. So you've got competitors, maybe they're really well funded and they're coming at you at 1,000 miles an hour and you got to make kind of decisions around, man, I need to, you know, I need to get this product better. Otherwise I'm going to get run over here. And look, that's the bloodbath of the free market, man.
Right.
There's winners and losers. Yeah.
Let's take this down. There's a slide on our doc here I want to go through, because it actually really does break it down really mm-hmm. practically for people who honestly lead large organizations, who are doing a solopreneur thing. And I really like this. So essentially this is, you know, according to this book, the secret to leading growth is your mindset. And I yep. really like that. So the first one is raise your standards, which we've essentially yep. talked a bit about. Know when the standard needs to be really high, and know when the standard yep. needs to be, it's got to be good enough to get it out into the world and get some feedback yep. back. And I think that can, yep. that can be anything. That can be, you know, right. writing online. That can be creating yep. content. That can be shipping product. It can be anything, sure. which is just like, yep. you know, pick up the pace. That one made me laugh because, I had a boss one time, and we would always laugh because when he wanted something quick, he would follow it up in all caps, now, now, now.
Yeah.
Which basically just meant, I don't want you to have any questions about how quickly.
Was he a boomer?
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Only boomers do all caps, yes. okay?
Yes.
I try and avoid it like the yes. plague, but honestly, that's the first sign.
Us millennials think that we're, you know, being yelled at there, right? But yeah. millennials can't handle a text if there's not an exclamation point on the back end of it.
Yep.
Boomers are 100%. Just, you know. But he learned that from, he had a company with Steve Wynn for many years when he was like in his 30s. And one thing he learned about Steve Wynn was every single thing had to be done now. And yeah. that was the way he led. Obviously, in a lot of times that caused chaos, but also it got stuff done quick. But that would be, we'd see an email, subject line, now, now, now. And that was now, what now, we now. Knew was.
I love it.
Was,
look, there's times for chaos, man. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like in my world, chaos is like we're trying to launch a new product or a new version of a product. And you've worked on it for 6 months and you got these deadlines. And we do these public events where we trying to, like, we want to announce stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're getting down. And like marketing's done everything, you've done everything ready to go. And like, man, you're like, that's chaos. Mm-hmm. You can't live in permanent chaos. You got to have seasons where you take a breath. You know, we have this thing in software called the cool down. You've literally worked 6 months, you've got it out the door. And then now you're going to take a breath for a couple of weeks, which doesn't sound like a very long time. Get some feedback from the market, fix a few bugs, get it polished up again and get it cooking even better. So yeah, chaos is fine, mm-hmm. but it can't be permanent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right, right. Sharpen your focus is the next one. And this is one that is really relevant, especially for me, right? Like waking up every day, especially if you're in the really early stages of something, it's generally you by yourself. There's, you know, just the day-to-day administrative stuff. There's the growth, there's the nuts and bolts. And like, I have found myself waking up every day going, okay, what's the focus today? Oh, these five right. things. Well, no, I can't get all these five things done today. So what's the, you know, what's the one thing? So
right.
Talk to me about, I guess, just in your situation. And I know that that focus probably changes, you know, from month to yep. month, maybe even week to week, but how do you determine this is what my focus is?
I ask myself a couple questions. What am I building? Mm-hmm. Right? Like what am I doing? Oh, I have a software app that is going to help people give. That's what I'm doing. Right? That was the early days. I wasn't doing anything else. That's what we were building. So what am I doing and how am I going to get there? Right? Like, and I work from the end back. So, you know, so if you know where you're going, go there in your mind, and then how many steps mm-hmm. are there between where you are today and where you want to be? Mm-hmm. And you might do a 3-month thing, you might do a 12-month thing, right? There's, you know, rarely you're going out beyond like 2 years, mm-hmm. right? You're just like, I'm building this. This is where I want to be in 12 mm-hmm. months. Okay. Mm-hmm. What have I got to do to get there? Mm-hmm. In the early stage of our business, you know, we had a crappy website. First thing we had to do was rebuild the website. The app worked. It was fine. We just weren't doing any marketing very well. So we had to get some, you know, marketing in place. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think it's good. And I still, so fast forward when your business gets some maturity and you get customers and you get revenue and maybe hopefully you're profitable or whatever, you're asking yourself kind of the same questions, but they mean that they lead to different answers. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I building? Right? Is that built? Okay. What am I building now? Mm-hmm. Does this need fixing? Is there maintenance involved? Okay, I'm going to maintain mm-hmm. that. Do I need 2.0 of whatever I'm doing? And it's the same process. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is where I want to be. So these are the things I got to do to get mm-hmm. there.
The last one is align your people. So for some yeah. people, that's just aligning yourself, aligning you.
Yep.
And then in some instances, yep. it's aligning 3 or 5 or 10, or in your case, you know, a couple hundred people. Yep. What does that look like? That's the most difficult part, is it's easy to have a focus and a vision in your head, but it's sort yeah. of the communication, and not just the communication, but the systems and the processes to get everybody aligned on the same thing.
Look, this is a law. Mm-hmm. The law is if you're a founder, no one is going to want it, build it, do it, sell it, market it, be as passionate as you. Right. So if you're at 100, it's going all down from there, all the way to, you know, you've got a 1,000-person company and you got a janitor. Like, how hard is it to make him passionate about the widgets or the services or whatever you're doing than the founder? It's impossible. Right. So all these rah-rah books about, man, align your mission and everyone's going to be pumped and they're all going to wake up.
Say the same mission statement every day, the minute they walk through the doors.
Every day.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So now let me flip that. So my belief is, if the founder is 100 out of 100 in passion, belief, go, you know, it's going down. Mm-hmm. Just be real about it. Mm-hmm. So how many people can you get in the 90 percentile, you know, of the passion and focus and desire to see this thing win? You know, it's good to have a co-founder. That's the first thing I learned. Like the boomer kind of thing is go and do it on your own, be your own man, be your own mind. That's out the window. It's proven now that when you have 2 or even 3 mm-hmm. or even 4, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. co-founders, now you've got more than 1 at 100. Now you've got 2 or 3 people that are as passionate as you. So you got to split the equity at the beginning of a project, but the Bible talks about the power of compound, mm-hmm. you know, energy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you 1 can put 1,000, 2 can put 10,000. Right? Mm-hmm. This is exponential thing. Mm-hmm. So have co-founders, and then, you know, early on you're going to have senior kind of people that you bring in to try and build your business. And you got to start with something you believe in, and then you just got to have the ability to be able to sell that mm-hmm. as the organization grows. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do.
Yeah,
and it's something you'll. You know, and you'll have people that it'll stay for 1 or 3, and, you know, they'll go to do another job mm-hmm. and because they've got a better offer and they got offered more money, and you're devastated because, man, weren't we in for the mission? They're like, you know, the mission is my family, and I got a 20 grand kind of opportunity yeah. to make more money. Yep. Like, and so your mission didn't really matter to me that right. much. So keep it all in perspective. Mm-hmm. And obviously while you have people working for you, keep them aligned around the main thing as best you can, and keep it positive and care for them and shepherd them, and, you know, like you're going to do in any exercise, and take them on the journey with mm-hmm. you.
All right. The book is called Amp It Up, and we're going to link to that in the show notes. We'll probably even link to a couple of those interviews just so people can kind of get it from all context. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So now I'm going to get some advice from you.
Am I in the advice business?
You are in the advice business. You're in the advice. You are officially in the,
kicking and screaming.
The advice business. So, okay. I had this little side hustle that I started with a couple of friends at the beginning of COVID, and we're kind of stuck as to what to do with it. Do we do anything with it? Do we shut it down? Or do we try and kind of rebreathe some life into it? So I want to kind of give you an mm-hmm. overview of what the journey has been so far. And I'm the king of context. So just tell me to get on with it if you're getting all the context. All right. Context you need. Okay. So a couple of buddies, been friends forever. One of them is a successful entrepreneur. He owns like 5 for the sort of highest grossing hair salons and spas in the country. So very successful, owns a bunch of small businesses. The other guy runs sales for, a fast growing startup, and we've been friends for a long time. Anyways, we met this guy about 4 years ago who built an app that is in the payment space. So basically it's an app you can download on pretty much almost any POS software, POS hardware terminal, excuse me, that's out there. So we predominantly use Clover. Basically what this app is it's a part of this big company that's essentially a kind of a partner ISO for First Data. So nothing, this isn't flashy. It's like, you know, nuts and bolts, ISO business. What the app allows you to do is it allows you to pass the credit card fee on to the customer. Okay, yep. So some laws changed. So they released this
That used to be illegal, but now it's not.
Right, exactly. So when you walk into a, you know, a liquor store and they say there's a minimum of $10, technically that's not legal. Technically now they have to offer a cash price or a card price, right?
Right.
So this guy hits us up about 4 years ago and we get kind of when they first started there, I guess you could just call it a licensing deal. So, hey, do you guys want to go build a sales team to go sign people up for this product? So we get a pretty insane deal with them. We essentially get about 1.4% of every swipe. So it nets pretty out good. To about 14 grand per million processed, right? So he comes to us and says, hey, you guys want to help us sell it. So we kind of tried everything. We did. We thought, oh, liquor stores will be really good because we had built a digital ad network in some liquor stores about 8 years ago. Turns out liquor store owners really actually care about their customers. And so they couldn't wrap their head around obviously telling a customer, you know, we're going to add 3% to every one of your transactions. So 10 conversations, we realized that failed. We tried to do a few different ones. Again, we were thinking bigger, some people in Vegas. Again, just didn't work out. So we kind of set it on the side. And then COVID hits. And our friend that's the salon owner hits us up as he's preparing to reopen the salon. And he's like, guys, I think it's time. I think salons are going to go for this. I just had to spend 10 grand in PPE to essentially get my salon in compliance to get it reopened. I've been closed for 8 weeks, whatever. So literally within 2 days, we built a little website. He started a podcast called the Everyday Salon Podcast, where it's just like his journey of building a salon through the pandemic. We did an interview on it, and then we got a hold of an email list of a conference for salon owners. And we were off to the races. We sent out an email and it was like you said at the beginning, it was like we were onboarding customers like crazy. It was like, holy crap, how is this? This is nuts. We signed up about, I think it was like 20 salons in the first 30 days. Cool. And essentially it's, you know, $59 a month for the app. We send them a free Clover device, whatever. So all of a sudden we go from this business, I think we had maybe one person on it making about $120 a month, to all of a sudden, honestly, anywhere from about $7,500 to just under 10 grand a month in reoccurring revenue. The money was showing up in our account every single month. And it was like, whoa, this is crazy. So we found the major problem was this. The major problem was that the inventory and booking softwares in the salon business are owned by payment processing companies. And so to use them, you likely have to use their payment processor. And so no matter how much a salon owner wanted to switch, it would have required them to add an extra terminal. So they would have to do the checkout on one terminal and then swipe the card on the other terminal. So we realized really quickly, we're not gonna be able to scale this really any further than just the random person who is down to do this. So basically we had somebody approach us, a company that buys these books of business, for, you know, 15 to 30X monthly revenue. And so we were like, man, we spent no money starting this. Let's pull the chips off the table. Let's take the points and figure out what to do. So we sold it. So now we still have the business. We have, you know, a few $1,000 in the bank. We're trying to decide what do we...
You have the entity
that
has some money, but you actually sold the recurring revenue.
We sold the recurring revenue business because essentially, you know...
Which, by the way, I think was the smart thing to do.
Okay. Yeah. That was what we were
like, because like when Jack Dorsey steps down from Twitter and is totally focused on his payments company, when Clover and this, and like when all these guys are like just going gangbusters and changing the payments world, it's like, guys go for that, you know, try and find something.
Exactly. So basically, we had this little business, we have a few $1,000 in the bank. The salon buddy has now, and I think I've talked about it before, gotten into the RV space. So he bought an RV, he's got an RV YouTube channel, and now he's selling cutting boards for RVs, and he's just a natural, right?
Random.
So he's like, guys, campgrounds, RV parks, they would love this. So we buy the domain rvpay.net, we build a little animated video, set up a one-page, you know, site, and go start trying to find email lists. Well, turns out RV space, exact same thing. You have an RV park, you want to book your, you know, you want to book it online, same thing. So, and again, RV park owners don't got a lot of, I can't find an email list anywhere. You know what I mean?
Right, sure.
So basically what we're trying to figure out is, can we somehow do this again. None of us have time to do this more than, you know, an hour a week, if that, right now.
Right.
There's about 3,000 people nationwide on this product. So there's, it's kind of getting some adoption. People that are doing it are like auto shops, restaurants, car dealerships, plumbers, right. handymen.
Right.
So we're kind of going, do we, you know, set up rvpay.net? Do we set up Puppy Pay and go after, you know?
You ready?
Yep.
Ready? Yep.
Done.
Kill it.
Call it a day.
Call it a day. Split the money, shut the thing down, but, go out for a nice steak dinner.
And be done with it. And so there's no value in getting this to a place where we could maybe have someone come on to run it and just get the money in the mailbox. Sure, it's just not worth it.
You guys done it. You said it. You got an hour a week. How are you going to change the world with an hour?
But we did it with an hour a week at the beginning.
Yeah, but now then you hit a wall.
Right. Okay. So we made a gamble. We had fun.
That was one of Frank's points. Extreme focus.
Right. Right. So the idea here is the payoff of the lack of focus it will create makes it just a complete waste.
I mean, unless you want to dump everything and do this full time and throw your whole heart and soul, and there's three of you that want to
right.
do it.
That's the problem. None of us do.
Bam.
But the money was good every month. Okay. I get it. Okay.
Well, you should have just kept it and then just take the 10 grand and split it up and just let it be its thing.
Right. Right. Okay. What about one more option.
Yeah.
Well, So the reason we got these first salons is because this guy had a voice in the salon industry.
And he had friends.
So do we go find a influencer in the plumber space and just go to them and say, hey, we've got this thing. We'll give you 50%.
There's no influencers in the plumber space. Like, is there plumber crack?
There's got to be. There's got to be. Okay, so you're telling me it's a waste of time.
Yeah, unless you're going to – this is what you want to do for the next 5 years.
Which it's not. Know. It's not. This has been the problem. It's been sitting dormant now. I think we sold it in the over the summer. And
is there money in the bank?
Yeah.
Yeah. Liquidate it. Give it out to the partners and go and have a big steak dinner.
Call it a day. Okay.
Call it.
Okay. RVPay.net, massive failure. Thank you.
No. Just put a ball in there. Boom.
Okay.
Feels good, man. Killing those
exactly.
Things.
Killing your darlings, right? I love that. Okay. Okay. Last topic. We got some listener questions. Okay. So posted yesterday asking about some listener questions. Yep. Number one, is it possible to build a business and have a work-life balance? If so, how? Hustle culture is a yes big and, thing.
Yeah. Yes and no. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I don't know. When you're starting, there's no work-life balance. You're just working your butt off. Mm-hmm. So like if you're coming in like, oh, I'm going to start my own business and I'm going to, you know, get some revenue and I'm going to have an easier life. It's just not, I've never seen that. Mm-hmm. Is there places where you get to where the business is at a cool place and you're making a profit and you're not, you know, doing 100 hours a week? Yeah, at some point. Mm-hmm. But don't kid yourself that you're going to have this business and not have to work your butt off
right.
for it.
Right.
So
how do you, how do you check out or do you just never check out? Because I'm around you a fair bit. You're fairly not stressed and laid back and you have a lot of fun for a guy that has a lot of, you know, in those moments, are you just completely shutting it off and you just know when to turn it on?
It's going on in your mind all the time, but you do have to have hobbies, mm-hmm. you know, in the summer, man, I block out Friday afternoon. I go play golf mm-hmm. with some friends. Like I just do it. It doesn't mean I'm not thinking about stuff or picking up my phone. You know, I try and turn it off. So yeah, you know, like at the moment I'm trying to ski, you know, on a Friday afternoon too. Like it's just, so you need some hobbies and some outlet and, you know, focus on your family and take, you know, like there is, you got to turn stuff off, mm-hmm. but man, if you want an easy life and you want it 9 to 5, you're not starting a business.
Right.
It just doesn't
get
work
a good
like
job.
That. So
enjoy it. Yeah.
The whole work-life balance thing is it's all relative too. What's balance for me? Like, you know, might be just totally ridiculous for someone else. Balance for me is, you know, up at 5:30-ish, 6, mm-hmm. and just kind of sign off at about 6. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a 12-hour day. Now, I'm not like all day, every day, you know, taking meetings, doing stuff. I'm reading, I'm researching, I'm, you know, in meetings, I'm listening. You know, I got 4 meetings today, mm-hmm. you know, after we finish mm-hmm. this. So, I don't think there's a way to manage yourself, your heart, your time, your emotions to be able to do this for the long term. and you just got to work out what that is for you. Mm-hmm. Recognize when you're getting a bit burned out, when you're frustrated, and be self-aware enough to be able to, you know, put the tools down and go and take a break.
Great. Great. Question number two, what is the difference between healthy ambition and unhealthy ambition? How do you tell if you're heading into a dangerous direction, you know, struggling with greed or any of this? So this, I guess, is more of that, you know, kind of like spiritual, like how are we looking at this? What is our motivation? Yeah. What's the difference?
Like if you're a Christian, like in this context of what we're talking about believers building businesses. You have to have the perspective of, you know, I'm a steward. Mm-hmm. Everything I have, God has entrusted it into my care, and I'm going to steward it for a while. And then one day I'm not going to be here anymore. And hopefully I've stewarded well what he's given me. Might be a big thing, might be a small thing. So I think there's this is a differentiator, I would say, of those of us who are believers and want to build businesses. Our motives are a bit different. Mm-hmm. If your motive is to only get rich, you've missed the point, mm-hmm. I think, as a believer. If your motive is to build a company that can provide great jobs, great services, and build wealth that you could actually, you know, give away in accordance to what, you know, you're really passionate about, I think that's the posture you want. Mm-hmm. So, you know, look, humans are funny. You put money in front of people that don't know how to handle money, and they're not going to do well mm-hmm. with it. And hopefully, you know, we're positioning ourselves as believers really in line with, you know, what Jesus talked about as stewarding what he gives us and making sure we do well with it. And then making sure we're generous mm-hmm. by helping others, helping the poor, building the kingdom. That's the whole point mm-hmm. for us, right? That's what we believe. So make sure you're doing that and don't wait to give until you've got a lot. Mm. Start giving small amounts early. You know, I'm a believer in 10% being a good floor mm-hmm. for generosity mm-hmm. in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. But if that's like crazy, if you start at 1%, mm-hmm. work your way up.
Yeah, it's a muscle that's built, you know? It really
is. Yeah, 100%.
Good, yeah.
And if you keep that the main thing, then you don't get prideful, you don't get greedy, you don't make wrong decisions driven by greed and money, mm-hmm. and it just keeps your heart right mm-hmm. in the whole process, mm-hmm. you know? And like it's pretty clear when Jesus says, hey, if you can't be trusted with small things, how can you be trusted with big things? And that to me says, hey, like, if you can be trusted with a $100,000 a year business where you're generating $100,000 and you're giving 10 or 20 of it away, maybe I can trust you with $1 million. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the perspective we've always got to have.
Okay. So just because you kind of mentioned it, I think this is a good question. And maybe this is getting into a different kind of territory. You said generating $100,000 a year business and then being able to give away. What are your beliefs on giving / tithing out of a business?
Well, I believe in yep. it. Putting aside the legalese,
I was going to say, right.
covenant, like there's no need to have that debate because I think it's a moot point. Mm-hmm. The point is, and there's many in the New Testament, there's a lot of scripture around giving not just 10%, but much more. Mm-hmm. You could argue that Jesus wants everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's get over our 10% yep. thing. Old covenant, boom, Hebrews, Melchizedek, Abraham. Right. Like, you know, I'm happy to have conversations right. about right. that. But here's the point. Am I going to live for God and submit to God? And does he own everything? Mm-hmm. And if my view of giving in both an Old and a New Testament sense is giving is a mechanism for me to, in reality, keep God first. Mm-hmm. So if I can keep God first in my money, that's going to, because where my treasure is, that's where my heart mm-hmm. is, right? Mm-hmm. So giving to me is like a triggering moment for me to keep in alignment with God's mm-hmm. plan and will for my life. One. Two, it's almost like God's management system for humans to keep them, you know, keeping him first. Two, it's to then go and do things that are good with it. So I'm giving, we believe giving to your local church is, you know, important because we believe the local church is where the gospel is preached, ministries, you know, beyond the local church for sure. That giving to kingdom building business is, I think, something that every Christian should be involved in. And then we're commanded to help the poor. Mm-hmm. And so what are we doing to help? I'm involved with a few different charities that help inner city kids in the area of arts. And, you know, just there's no rules on what you should be mm-hmm. doing. Just find someone who's doing something that you agree with and you're passionate about and go and give them some money. Yep. And that's my stand
great.
On the whole thing.
Great. Lastly, what characteristics should I look for in a co-founder? Now, we've talked a lot on this podcast about some of the more practical characteristics. So
yep.
sales versus product building. So yep. this person didn't necessarily clarify. I guess what I would love to ask is more like character type stuff, mindset right. type stuff. So anybody right. can find someone that's talented. What would you say about kind of the stuff beneath the surface in looking for a co-founder?
I mean, beyond the obvious of like, someone being more skilled than you at another thing, right? That's probably the first thing. You don't want two co-founders who have the same gifts. You know, you want to have co-founders that are all different, have different strengths. So that's the obvious one. But I think you said a word there just around the character. I think, you know, you're going to be, it's like a marriage. A co-founder is a marriage and you better enjoy that person and you better enjoy being around them and you better have the same values. Like, you know, if you're a believer, you don't have to have a Christian as a co-founder, but you better have someone who believes in the things that you value, right. family, honesty,
generosity,
integrity, yep. right? Mm-hmm. Like you got to have people that jive with you around the areas that you know, you're going to die on certain hills around your character mm-hmm. and the way you want to do business. So that's really important. So there's the skill difference. Obviously, you want a different strength kind of partner, but you want to be aligned in your values and how you want to do business. Otherwise, you're not going to get through the tough times because it's your character and the values that you are committed to that's going to keep you staying the course through the toughest parts of the journey of growing your company. And if you're not aligned on those things, that's just going to be really hard. You're not going to really do well. So, you know, have different skills and definitely, but have alignment of character and values.
Great. Awesome. Well, as usual, this was fun.
Yeah,
another
man,
Thursday morning, another episode. Episode 8. That's wild.
Wow, already.
Already. And you did an interview. We did a podcast interview for the Mission and Margin podcast earlier this week.
Yeah.
So that'll be on this feed as well. And have a couple of cool interviews lined up for the next month or so. So
great.
Only going to keep having fun on this. Dean,
absolutely.
As usual, thanks for the time, man.
Thanks. See you, everyone.
Yep. Talk to you soon.